This morning we looked at how bodhisattvas train in wisdom. And those skilled bodhisattvas, they train in the union of method and wisdom, because it's crucial that one trains in the union of method and wisdom, these two together, in order to attain enlightenment. Training only in wisdom or training only in method will not lead to the attainment of enlightenment. Hence, the skilled bodhisattva trains in the union of the two. So for ourselves, who aspire to the bodhisattva paths, we should emulate our role models, emulate the bodhisattvas as well as we can. But we need to start with where we are. So primarily our focus needs to be on cultivating ethical restraint, and then cultivating ethics in conjunction with the method practices of generosity and patience, joyous perseverance. And as we gain skill in this, we also cultivate love and compassion and bodhicitta. And as our qualities and our skill grow and our merit grows, we then become ready where we can apply ourselves to starting with the cultivation of concentration and wisdom. So this is how we should emulate the bodhisattvas. Now continuing with the text, we come to the practice about analyzing and abandoning one's own faults. The 31st practice of bodhisattvas. If you don't analyze your own faults, you may look like a Dharma practitioner, but are not likely to act as one. Therefore, scrutinizing carefully your own errors and abandoning them is the practice of bodhisattvas.
용구디에 Deniki Kunodang, Kunong and Bachayada, Nami Sim, Namiang Shore Moshe, Desha Shiada, Timu, Tam Yanta, Jidin Chigi on the Jodu, Jodu, Jogu Due, Mendoza, Sosoran, Jeba Majebaina, Jeba Majebajik Jeben, Manchu Chu, Mayimbig, Chawa, and then Namiadang, and Tam Yanjada, Denisola, Yanga Yore, Esorda, Rangi Chuba, Rangi Madana, Chibi, Zuki, Chimin, J. CB, Sidu.
Look at the first couplet of lines. If you don't analyze your own faults, you may look like a Dharma practitioner, but are not likely to act as one. For ourselves, we've given rise to a wish to be of benefit to others, to live a life of great meaning, and to have a beneficial impact on the lives of others. The starting point is to look at ourselves. We may have the wish to be of benefit to others, but the starting point is to look within ourselves. We need to identify our own limitations. It is our responsibility to firstly identify our own limitations, and in dependence on that, strive to eradicate them. Without first identifying our own limitations, we will not be able to eliminate them, and thereby our ability to benefit others will be weak. Moreover, it's through this process of looking within ourselves and getting to know ourselves well, seeing the state of our current mental state, we will start to see more clearly our motivation and see how much of our motivation is dominated by an other cherishing a wish, as well as how much of it is dominated by the self-cherishing wish. We need to look out for our desire to be praised by others, a desire to have a good reputation, to be thought well of by others. We need to look within that, and where we express a motivation to benefit others, to see whether that's sincere, whether that's genuine, or whether underlying that is a wish for recognition, a wish for praise and respect from others. So this is very important. So only we can do this. It's our responsibility, and only we can look in our own minds and to identify faults and thereby be able to eradicate them. If one does not do this and do this effectively, then when one engages in Dharma practices, one tries to restrain one's mind, practice ethical restraint, generosity, or even teach the Dharma, to the extent that one has not done this process of coming to analyze one's own motivation well, to that extent, one will be under the influence of a mistaken motivation. And this may be quite hidden from oneself, but it will not necessarily be hidden to others. Then one's activities to benefit others will be pervaded by a wish for self-benefit. And therefore, with this flawed motivation, the beneficial impact on others will be greatly impeded. Moreover, if we retreat into isolation, focus now on developing good qualities through meditation, the commitment now to meditate on what we've been studying, but our mind still is largely a mystery to us. Our mind still remains largely unexplored. We'll find our motivation still pervaded by the self-cherishing attitude, fantasizing about what others are saying about us, fantasizing about, after this period of retreat, what reputation will I have, all the things I'll be able to do, the crowds that will come to my teachings. This, of course, is a faulty motivation. And moreover, one has retreated to isolation so as to be away from distractions. However, due to our limited self-analysis, we remain greatly distracted. We're distracted by our own minds. And therefore, any spiritual progression is greatly limited. So we've entered into a retreat to limit our distractions, but we end up distracting ourselves because we fail to look at ourselves with honesty. So this is really important. We need to, now that we have come to recognize the need to spiritually develop, to transform ourselves, now that we have committed to living a worthwhile and meaningful life, we need to analyze the flaws within us that conflict with achieving our goals, with achieving a life that is in accordance with virtue, a meaningful life. But in order to achieve this, we need to look at ourselves, coming to know our particular weaknesses. To do this, we need to look at our motivation, our underlying intention, with honesty and with clarity. Therefore, scrutinizing carefully your own errors and abandoning them is a practice of bodhisattvas. So when a bodhisattva then is engaging in virtuous activities, no matter when or how, whether they're on their own and they're meditating or engaging with others, they always stay very aware of their mental processes. They utilize the great companions of mindfulness and introspection to be always aware of their motivation, guarding it against coming under the influence of any afflicted mind at all. So whether they are engaging in a practice such as generosity, directly helping others, whether it's through teaching or through or offering service or help or material generosity, they guard themselves, primarily ensuring that their motivation is ethical, that they're guarding their mind against coming under the influence of afflictions such as miserliness. Moreover, skilled bodhisattvas also will engage in their virtuous activities, guarding against believing that phenomena exist in the way that they appear, that they exist truly. And thereby skilled bodhisattvas, whilst engaging in virtuous activities, through long habituation to relying and or utilizing mindfulness and introspection, will also guard against acting under the influence of grasping at inherent existence. For us, as who aren't that developed, though, we should still guard our motivation, whether we're meditating or we're directly engaging with others, against hoping for reward, hoping for a good reputation, hoping for respect from others, but rather to ensure that our motivation is pure and our wish to benefit others is sincere. This is how Bodhisattva's practice, and this is the example that we need to follow. As this is how Bodhisattva's practice, so too should we. Whatever we do, be aware of our motivation. This is what Bodhisattvas do, and we should do the same. When interacting with others or on our own, always guard our motivation, trying to keep it as pure as possible, trying to keep it in accordance with the other cherishing mind, and as free as possible from the influence of the self-cherishing mind. When benefiting others, whether directly or indirectly, try and keep our mind, the purpose of what we are embarking on, the purpose of what we're engaging in, clear for us. We are helping others not for recognition, not for reputation, not for thanks or a smile, but we're doing so to ease their burden of suffering. We're doing so so as to create the causes that all beings can achieve liberation from suffering and even enlightenment itself. This is the motivation with which to engage in beneficial deeds. When a bodhisattva engages in any kind of beneficial activity, such as generosity, bodhicitta is the dominant motivation, and we should follow that as an example. This is, of course, the case when directly engaging in beneficial activities for others, but when these beneficial activities are indirect, such as we're meditating alone, watch one's meditation, or watch one's motivation. Likewise, when listening to teachings, watch one's motivation. Watch, and what one's watching for is the presence and the arisal of afflictions. Watch for the arisal of pride, feeling that you're better than others. Watch for attachment, one's own self-interest. Watch for jealousy, competing with others. And if one notices that these starting to arise, eliminate them. This is a skillful practice of bodhisattvas, and we too need to emulate this.
ที่นี่นั่นแต่ยังเราจะกี่ชิ้นเลยรู้ว่าเอองี้รู้ว่าชีวิตสมจริงอาเจี๋ยเจี๋ยอาเจี๋ยเจี๋ยที่นี่สุสานเลยอันจริงอาเจี๋ยเจี๋ยนะเดี๋ยวมีเหลือท้องจงเลยกี่ยังไงรู้ว่ากี่ที่นั่นจริงอาเลยอันนี้ที่นี่ชีวิตของอาเลยกูชิบชีวิตมีสังสารยุ่งรู้ว่าที่สิ่งนี้คุณว่าที่ยังเราจะเชื่อก่อนเลยที่นั่นที่นี่เจี๋ยนะที่ก็มาที่สุสุสานตั้งชีวิตเจี๋ยที่นี่กี่เจี๋ยมาจู่ว่าเจี๋ยเจ้าว่าที่กี่ชิ้นเลยส์ที
Aspirants of the Bodhisattva path, such as ourselves, engage in an act such as generosity, where we engaging, helping others in some way. Then we need to be aware of our motivation. Brief, our motivation is to benefit others. This is our motivation, whether it's practicing material generosity or helping them with our skills and our talents, or in whichever way we are helping others, ensure that our motivation is to benefit them. To the extent that that motivation is lacking, to the extent that it is afflicted, then the quality of our practice of generosity is impeded. The ripening beneficial results is weakened. So we need to guard our mind against any hopes for respect from others, hopes for good reputation, hopes to be liked. Moreover, we also need to guard our speech and our behavior. When helping others, we should ensure that we act in a way that's in accordance with bodhisattvas. We should not act in a way that is likely, that is unskillful, and therefore likely for the person we are supposedly helping to get angry with us, or for their own afflictions to arise, and thereby they end up creating negative karma. That is not how bodhisattvas would engage with others. Their goal is to ease the burden of suffering of others, and therefore will not act in a way that causes them to the person they are helping to become even more afflicted. So therefore guard our speech, guard our behavior when helping others. Don't criticize them, don't belittle them. Don't say, I'm only helping you because you're so lazy, you're so useless. This is not the way bodhisattvas help. Good motivation and expressing oneself in a loving way, compassionate way, build connections with others, benefit others. This is the way bodhisattvas help. So in helping others, guard your mind. Guard your mind in the preparation, when you're planning the act, whilst doing the act, and afterwards too. Guard your mind. Especially, beware of the root affliction of pride, thinking that you are better than others. You're better than the person you're helping. You're better than those who are not helping. Guard yourself from looking down on the person that you're helping. Guard yourself against looking down on others, competing with them, seeing yourself as better than them. Moreover, guard yourself from any hope to receive something in return, hope for reward, hope for karmic fruition. Guard yourself from wanting acknowledgement from others, whether it's directly from the person one's helping or respect from your peers. Guard yourself against any hope of reciprocation. This is important. As aspirant bodhisattvas, we can already practice well like this. Take care of our minds. Our minds are our responsibilities. We'll be able to practice skillfully like this through training ourselves, coming to know ourselves, looking at our minds and being vigilant. So we can do this, and we should be acting in this way. Now we move to the next practice, which is about abandoning criticism of bodhisattvas.
Mm-hmm.
32nd praxis, if under the influence of the afflictions, I talk about the flaws of other bodhisattvas, I diminish myself alone. Not criticizing the faults of those who have entered the paths of the Mahayana is the practice of bodhisattvas. If under the influence of the afflictions, I talk about the faults of other bodhisattvas, I diminish myself alone. This line, this verse specifically refers to talking about bodhisattvas other than oneself. So us as aspirants bodhisattvas should take this much more broadly and relate it to all others, whether they are bodhisattvas or not. Why we should take it so broadly is as beginners, but also bodhisattvas do have to do this too, but especially for us as beginners, we need to still develop familiarity, habituation to watching our mind, being aware of our motivation, being aware of what's motivating our speech and our physical activities. We need to be very careful here. Hence, we should abstain from criticizing others, whether they are bodhisattvas or not. And to do so, we watch our mind. Watch for the arisal of the afflictions, whether attachment or desire for good reputation or our own pride. Because it's through these arisal of these afflictions that we end up engaging and talking badly about others. And this is important. We need to use this as a further training. Not to criticize others, not to say, what are you doing? You should know better than this. Criticizing others. Take care of our minds, our behavior, and our speech. Because where we allow our minds to become afflicted, and especially then when we act under the influence of those afflictions, as it says here, we diminish ourselves alone. In other words, we weaken our virtue, we weaken our accumulation of virtue. Moreover, we hinder our spiritual progression. We hinder the attainment of liberation and enlightenment. So we harm ourselves in weakening our virtue and hindering our spiritual progression. Moreover, we diminish ourselves in the eyes of others. When they hear, oh, there he is complaining and criticizing again. The possibility of them having trust or faith in oneself and thereby one being able to be beneficial to guide them, to benefit them, is also diminished. And then lastly, through acting under the influence of afflictions or not dealing with them skillfully when they arise, we continue to remain habituated by afflictions and remain dominant and strong within us. So for all these reasons, we need to guard ourselves, guard our mind, guard our behavior. So our responsibility to watch our minds, guard our minds, ensure that the afflictions, if they arise, we eliminate them, and certainly we don't act under the influence, because it's through the rise, or especially of anger, this is when we all too easily will criticize others, point out the faults in others. We are suffering, we express that suffering to others. Likewise, with pride. Pride arises within us. Then we're looking down on others, pointing out their faults, believing we are better. Similarly with attachment and other afflictions. These are what lead us to engage in harmful, negative behavior, such as criticizing others. This is not the way that aspirant bodhisattvas should engage. The verse here makes specific reference to one bodhisattva criticizing another. This is a greatly negative deed. Greatly negative deed, because both the criticizer and the criticized are beings who have committed to strive for enlightenment for the sake of others. They are both beings who are determined to benefit others, to ease the pain and suffering of others. These are beings worthy of praise. Neither should be involved in criticism. So this is a particularly harmful act for a bodhisattva to engage in, criticizing another. But if an ordinary being, such as ourselves, someone who is yet to become to enter the paths of the Mahayana, if we criticize a bodhisattva, whilst it's not as negative, it's still a greatly negative deed because of the power of the object, the bodhisattva. We need to be very careful then when we criticize others who may be bodhisattvas, who may turn out to be bodhisattvas. But moreover, again, we need to understand this verse more broadly. It doesn't only refer to bodhisattvas criticizing other bodhisattvas. It also refers to ordinary beings such as ourselves criticizing bodhisattvas. Furthermore, it also includes to ordinary beings such as ourselves criticizing other ordinary beings. Because whatever being we criticize, that being is held deep in the heart of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. They are the object of compassion. They are not worthy of criticism. We should refrain from criticism. We should refrain from acting in such a way that's contrary to the wishes of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And it's contrary to the wishes of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, not just because we're criticizing their object of compassion, but because we, who are also their objects of compassion, are harming the development of our virtue. We're creating obstacles to our spiritual progression. So therefore, there's no benefit that comes from criticizing others. There's no benefit that comes from acting under the influence of the afflictions. So this then brings us to the third and fourth line of this verse. Not criticizing the faults of those who have entered the paths of the Mahayana is the practice of bodhisattvas. So hopefully now from my explanation it's clear that this refers not merely to those, or not only to those who have entered the paths of the Mahayana, but no one should criticize others. This is something we need to refrain from doing.
Delia, Jam Ninja, Pampi Sims and Ninja, that were the Niki Norsha, Samja, Quidinich and Quadibu Sagre, she's uncle Dibus and Mombana, Dunga Yonchi, Pesagre, Samja, Ninja, Ninji, Delia, and Jigger, Jam Ninji Tone, Quig Notre Dikipa, and Gyan Sanchiada, and the Niki, Chico, Gishi, and Jambuchiada, Tap Kiki Tone, Colia, Manubi Tone, and Jig Pai, Colia, Lobden Jije.
The advice here for ourselves as very ordinary beings is do not attach importance to the faults of others, because this diminishes our own qualities. But all this being said, then it's another important point to make is that when a bodhisattva does observe others acting in a flawed way, when they are creating non-virtue, it's not that they ignore it. It's not that they stay silent and don't do anything. Rather, they don't criticize. So this is now a key distinction for a bodhisattva. When they notice someone acting in a way that's non-virtuous, a way that's not skillful, that brings harm, immediately, because of all the training the bodhisattva has gone through, the bodhisattva knows that this being now is acting under the influence of the three poisons. Ignorance, attachment, and anger are leading to this person acting in such a way. This person before them is creating the causes for further suffering. They're suffering now in that their afflictions have ripened, and they're creating the causes so they'll suffer in the future. So immediately love and compassion arises within in the bodhisattva. Under the influence of this powerful love and compassion, wish to benefit naturally arises. And under the influence of love and compassion, with the companion of wisdom, they will act in a way to benefit this being. They will have love and compassion compelling them to help this being. They'll have wisdom enabling them to help this being skillfully, to guide this being away from non-virtue. That is how bodhisattva responds. That is how bodhisattva responds. There's no criticism there. There's no afflicted response at all. They respond skillfully, powered by wisdom, love, and compassion. Moreover, when a bodhisattva recognizes another being, including other bodhisattvas, making errors, showing flaws, they know that every being who is yet to arise as a Buddha has not yet perfected all good qualities and eradicated all faults. Therefore, their qualities are not perfect, and their continuum is not free from stain. Therefore, it's not surprising when certainly ordinary beings, but even bodhisattvas, make some error, show some flaw. With this knowledge, criticism again does not arise, because they understand the situation of beings who are not yet Buddhas. Wanting to enter the paths of the Mahayana, we need to emulate those who have. We need to guard ourselves, guard our minds against criticizing others. You've heard then many times about the great importance of ethical restraint, foundation of all good qualities. And it should be abundantly clear that we're criticizing others. This is contrary to ethical restraint. We are not restraining ourselves from coming under the influence of the afflictions. Criticism is not appropriate. Acting under the influence of the afflictions is not appropriate for someone who aspires to enter the paths of the bodhisattvas. I encourage you here to guard your mind. Don't criticize others saying, why aren't they acting like I do? Why don't they think like I do? Why don't they have my views and opinions? Why aren't they doing this that I do? Why aren't they doing that that I do? Here, pride has arisen. We criticize others. This is a mistake. This only serves to accumulate non-virtue in our own continuum. And if we express this to others, we know that this doesn't then turn others towards virtue. It serves for their own afflictions to arise. And they also create non-virtue. And if we do aspire to becoming a Buddha for the sake of others, if we acting in a way that allows non-virtue to arise within us and others, we're impeding our own enlightenment and impeding the enlightenment of others. This is contrary to the goal of bodhisattvas. We end up creating obstacles for ourselves and others. We end up impeding our own spiritual progression and that of others. That is a foolish way to act. That is not a skillful way to act. If we want to become a bodhisattva, we need to emulate them now and start to act skillfully more and more, guarding our mind against the arisal of the afflictions. Moreover, when we observe behavior of others and we have a doubt arises within us, we think that this is faulty, remind ourselves, as was just said, all non-Buddhas have flaws. Their continuum is not stainless, their qualities are not perfected. Moreover, we do too, we are no different. In addition to that, we do not know their motivation. We are just guessing. We do not know their motivation. We do not know their circumstances. We do not know the story behind what they are doing. These we need to take to heart. We need to gain experience of these in our meditation. We see our mind going in a critical direction. Guard our mind from criticizing the objects of compassion of the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Criticizing others only makes us unhappy. Criticizing others verbally, displaying our criticism, only brings happiness to others, unhappiness to others. There is no benefit from this. Guard our minds. This is what we have to do. Rather, when we see others acting in a faulty way, keep our mind broad and expansive, knowing that our perceptions can be mistaken. But if our perspective is correct, this is a suffering being, creating further causes of suffering, and allow love and compassion to arise within us. This is a suitable response. This is a suitable response. That's the advice here, how aspirant bodhisattvas should practice this 30-second training. Now we come to the 33rd practice of bodhisattvas, about how they abandon attachment to householders and to households or benefactors and their loved ones. Competing for reward and respect leads to the decline of hearing, reflecting, and meditating. Abandoning attachment to the homes of our families and benefactors is a practice of bodhisattvas. Looking at the first line here, competing for reward and respect. So here, this we can think of a situation where we are helping others, perhaps helping others who have shown us kindness. Now we're helping them in return, so people such as benefactors. Again, be aware of one's motivation, because if our motivation is hoping for reward, hoping for respect, wanting to the other person to be ever more pleased with us, to like us ever more, hoping that the other person will reward us in some way, this is a tainted motivation. This is a motivation far from what a bodhisattva should have. Moreover, if together with a companion, with a friend, we are helping someone, we may well have, if we have an afflicted mind, then we may end up feeling a bit of competition with the person with whom we are helping someone else. We have the hope that, I hope I receive something, I receive more than this person. And in this way, we show the attachment that we're feeling, desire to receive greater rewards. We show our competitiveness with others. We show our self-cherishing. Likewise, attachment for that we get praised more than the other, we show our pride. Further faults will come. Again, if we're helping with someone, we argue with the other person, competing with the other person, harmony is lost. So all these kinds of afflicted faults come from not guarding one's motivation, hoping for something in reward, in return. This is important again, be aware of our minds, take control of our minds, ensure that we don't come under have a tainted motivation when helping others, because this can lead to disharmony. Like as was said, with the companion one is helping with, or even with the benefactor that one is helping, where we can feel that we are not receiving suitable respect or recognition for what we're doing, arguing that what someone else was offered should have come to us, it was rightfully ours. This is not the behavior of a bodhisattva. We need to guard our mind here. In addition to disharmony and negativity arising, through the arisal of afflictions, our virtuous endeavors, as we see in the second line, of hearing, reflecting on what we've been hearing, and meditating on that, these too decline. Because it's through the arisal of the afflictions that our virtuous activities are weakened. It's important here, as always, guard our minds. So due to unfulfilled desires disturbing and distracting our mind, our conduct, our way of thinking all deteriorate, leading to disharmony and conflict, whether between ourselves and other practitioners, or ourselves and those we are meant to be helping. So bodhisattvas, moreover, not only guard themselves from this, but they're also aware that around them are other bodhisattvas, greatly skilled in the trainings, But they may not be aware of just that this person is yet so skilled. Right, sorry, I must forget that. I didn't say that so well. Furthermore, when we are engaging in beneficial acts with others, especially alongside someone else, we don't know the qualities in that person's mind. We have no idea whether they are more advanced than us, whether they're even bodhisattvas. We can project, we can guess, but that is all. So if we then encourage the person we are helping, our benefactor, to support me rather than that person, this is gravely negative, because if the benefactor were to support the bodhisattva, they would accrue great stores of virtue. We end up impeding that accumulation of virtue. So therefore, again, guard our mind. Don't criticize others. Don't judge so easily. Because not only do we end up harming ourselves, we easily end up harming others too. So how do bodhisattvas guard themselves in such situations? Well, this then is shown in the third and fourth line of this practice. Abandoning attachment to the homes of our family and benefactors is the practice of bodhisattvas. So abandoning attachment here includes giving up any hope for reward or recognition. Important for us here too to follow the examples of the bodhisattvas. They guard their minds against the rise of afflictions, ensuring the mind stays virtuous and pure. We too need to do this as well. Guard against the rise of mightiness, attachments and pride, which can come about too easily in situations such as these. When we're helping others, be sure that we do so free of hope for recognition or reward. Because that hope is a mind of mightiness, wanting something for ourselves first and foremost, wanting to hold on to it, to grasp at it. This is an impediment to spiritual progression. This is not in accordance with ethical restraint. Moreover, afflictions such as mightiness, attachments and pride ripen, these serve to harm our relationships with others, whether they're with our colleagues, whether they're with the person that we are helping, harms our relationships. This is the function of afflictions, they cause harm. So again, we need to guard our mind against their arisal, against coming under their influence. They cause suffering for us now, they cause suffering for others too, and they hinder our spiritual progression. Where we see our benefactors having good relations with others, guard your mind against the arisal of jealousy. Guard your mind in this way. Practice ethical restraint. Ethical restraint is a virtuous mind. Jealousy is a non-virtuous mind. Ethical restraint creates causes for liberation. Jealousy does not. Moreover, rejoice in the good relationship between these people. Generate joy in your mind. Generate the aspiration. May that independence on that relationship, may both rapidly progress towards enlightenment. Being aware of the potential here for the desire for fame and reward to arise within oneself. Abandon such afflicted minds. Abandon any hope for worldly benefit. Abandon any hope. Abandon any clinging to things that actually have no essence. This is a virtuous attitude. This is the way bodhisattvas practice, and we should emulate this example. When we see, for example, someone practicing generosity, practicing material generosity to someone who is impoverished. Especially as beginners, we need to guard our mind. Guard our mind against any desire or attachment to receive that offering for ourselves rather than the impoverished person. We should be very aware of the potential danger to encourage the practitioner of generosity in this moment to rather give that offering to us, telling them that we're more worthy or we're more needy. This we should guard against, even if this is the case. Because this here tends to be us acting under the influence of the afflictions. These afflictions which can sneak up on us and deceive us so easily. We need to guard ourselves here. Rather, encourage this person engaging in virtue. Rejoice that this benefactor is accumulating stores of virtue. Moreover, rejoice that this impoverished person is receiving support. Rejoice that this impoverished person has created the causes in the past that they now can experience this result, and be joyful for them. Here we are restraining our mind, practicing ethical restraint from miserliness, and we too are accumulating virtue. This is important. And this is particularly relevant for the ordained. The Sangha community is dependent on offerings from others, is dependent on the kindness of benefactors. So the ordained community is to be very aware of their motivation here, becoming afflicted, wondering how much was received, whether others received more or less. And when there's not enough for everyone to receive, hoping that they get, this is not appropriate. As aspirants of the Bodhisattva paths, all of us, whether ordained or not, need to be aware of our motivation. Rejoice in the good fortune of others, those who are on the receiving end of the kindness of others, those as well as those who are showing kindness to others. Rejoice. Rejoice free of hope to be included in those who receive. Just rejoice in what others are receiving. Rejoice in those who are giving. This is how bodhisattvas practice, because bodhisattvas understand what they need is not offerings, it's not respect, it's not a reputation, it's virtue, it's merit, it's independence on ever-growing stores of merit. They can develop ever greater inner qualities and be of benefit to others. Moreover, through others creating virtue, through others receiving kindness, both benefit. Suffering is alleviated. This is the goal of bodhisattvas. The alleviation of suffering in the world. To express it differently, the alleviation of the afflicted minds in the world. And therefore, they make sure no afflictions arise within themselves and rejoice when others are acting in virtuous ways. So don't leave this or any other practices as a mere story, something that was said just to entertain oneself, maybe bring a bit of joy to one's mind. These are all advice for us. We should take these to heart, apply them to ourselves, live our life in accordance with all of these trainings. What hopefully has come across very clearly in this presentation, it's imperative we watch our own minds. It's imperative we are aware of our own minds at all times, particularly our motivation. And if we can keep our motivation in accordance with the other cherishing mind, in accordance with that of a bodhisattva, we would never discourage others from engaging in virtue. In fact, we'd only encourage them. Watching our mind, ensuring that it's free from the influence of the afflictions, we all our in this way practicing ethical restraint in all our interactions with others will be motivated by minds of virtue, freed from afflicted motivation. This is of great importance. Watch one's mind, whatever one is doing. Now we come to the 34th practice, that of refraining from harsh speech. Crude and abusive talk disturbs the mind of others and undermines the practices of a bodhisattva. Abandoning harsh speech, that which is unpleasant to others, is the practice of bodhisattvas. The outline here, we see the translation of harsh speech. For this we can understand in a very broad way. What is meant by harsh speech? Or as we have in the first line, crude and abusive talk. It refers to any kind of speech that disturbs the mind of others. So whether the speech is abusive, whether it's rude, whether it's crude, whether it's vulgar, any kind of speech that disturbs the mind of others is to be abandoned. And it's to be abandoned because it's contradictory to a bodhisattva's heartfelt wish to benefit others. And therefore, us as aspirants to the Mahayana path, to the paths of the bodhisattva, we need to emulate this illustration and not act in a way that brings pain and suffering to others. The goal of a bodhisattva is to ease the suffering of others, to bring joy into their lives, to turn them towards virtue. But if we talk to others in a crude and abusive way, in a rude and a vulgar, harsh way, this is contrary to the behavior of a bodhisattva.
Lunga Yusum Yajetim Turum Sungorwa, Chesan Turum Sungorwa, Dininza, Sixu Shevaina, Javisi, you choose to change the Mijuba Lepa Yamru Gores to Pal Gada Sharu Gores, Chesan Dininza, Sixu Shena, change the Mijuba, the Karasan Shalia, Duma Sea, and the Yujuvia, Turum Rangi Turum Soyadi, Nanyamin Nagore, Chesan Sixu She, and the Shangi Sim Makiva Shevaina, Shangi Duma Giada, Shalia Kora Lanchon, and Shalia Diva Sajua. And
So if one expresses one's afflicted mind in such a way, you're talking in a way that's crude and abusive, this is clearly not acting under the influence of the mind of restraint, the ethical mind of restraint. Therefore, it's contrary to the behavior of a bodhisattva. When one expresses one's own afflictions, one oneself is suffering, one creates the causes to suffer further in the future, and therefore creates obstacles to one's spiritual progression and the fulfillment of one's wish to be of meaning and benefit into the lives of others. And thereby, we see in the second line, and undermines the practices of a bodhisattva, because the bodhisattva is harming their own spiritual progression. Moreover, the bodhisattva's heartfelt wish is to ease the pain and suffering of others. But when they, if they were to speak in an abusive manner towards others, this serves only to make others suffer more, in that their afflictions arise. And when the other person's afflictions are arising, they are suffering. And if they then, and therefore they're creating the causes that will lead to future suffering through that karma being created, and they may respond in a negative way, creating even greater negative karma. So therefore, they create the, if a practitioner acts under the influence of their afflictions and speaks in a crude and abusive manner, they're only creating obstacles to their own and others' spiritual progression and achievement of happiness. So rather, bodhisattva, as we see in the third and fourth line, abandoning harsh speech, that which is unpleasant to others, is the practice of bodhisattvas. Bodhisattva, through their training, has come to see the grave faults of the afflictions and the danger they pose to themselves as well as to others. Moreover, because of the strong development of love and compassion, they do not want to disturb the minds of others. They do not want to engage in activity that others find unpleasant. Motivated by love and compassion, and with a clear recognition of the danger that the afflictions pose to their spiritual progression as well as to the achievement of happiness by others, they abandon any kind of abrasive speech, and rather they talk in a way which is pleasing to others. And they do so through engaging in the bodhisattva practice of ethical restraint, restraining their minds and thereby restraining their body and their speech. And accompanying this, the primary ethical practice of a bodhisattva is to restrain the self-cherishing mind. This is the primary ethical practice of a bodhisattva, and rather to allow the other cherished mind to grow and flourish, act under that, the influence of the other cherishing mind. This is the focus of bodhisattvas, to bring happiness to others, to build connection with others so that they can influence them in a meaningful way. And anything that's contrary to this, such as crude and vulgar speech, is abandoned. This is how bodhisattvas practice, abandoning harsh speech, that which is unpleasant to others.
Jenla, Tixu Shayada, and the Lunga Yusum Yukonetana, Lunga Yusum Yukonet, Shanley, Nuber, Saint Makiba Chad, and Shan Kondolayaga, Java de Jachasa, Dusin, Sunguri, Bangurias, Sunguris, Dene Sunje, and Sungue de Kitchimuri, Essay, that Digi Lapjaliadi, Dirwadanzo.
So for ourselves, we need to guard ourselves from coming under the influence of afflictions and expressing them. Never respond to viciousness. Not to be even rude to others. That is just the expression of the afflictions. Rather, hold them dear, hold them close, and respond with love and gentleness.
So
has been presented in this teaching. We need to guard our own minds. Our minds are our responsibility. We need to guard them against the arisal of the afflictions. And if they arise, not to let them abide. And if they are, we notice them, apply antidotes. Be wary of attachment in particular, which is so deceptive. Certainly also anger, but also pride, which also is deceptive. As well as a mind of jealousy, competing with others. Guard against their arisal. Eliminate them. And we do so through the crucial practice of ethical restraint, restraining our mind and the resulting physical behavior and speech. And in addition to practicing ethical restraint, we also need to guard against the subtle motivation, which is the subtle underlying motivation, which for us is still likely to be the self-cherishing mind. Guard against that, trying to cultivate and come under the influence of the other cherishing mind, where the well-being of others is first and foremost within us. And thirdly, companion to these is to cultivate the wish to benefit others, directly as well as indirectly. Cultivate this wish to be a person that brings benefit to others, that at the very least doesn't add to their burden of suffering. Wherever we can, eases that burden of suffering, guides them in the direction towards the accumulation of the causes of happiness. And lastly, where we see others engaging in virtuous acts, continuing to guard our mind, not allowing jealousy or competitiveness or any other affliction to arise, consciously rejoice in the causes of happiness that this being is accumulating. Rejoice in what they're doing. Likewise, the person who's on the receiving end of beneficial acts, rejoice that they also, that they are being aided and helped, that they themselves in the past have accumulated the causes to be aided and helped. Rejoice in all the virtue that is being accumulated. These are the practices of bodhisattvas, and for us, as aspirants, these are the examples to emulate. So we'll conclude here for today, and then tomorrow we'll come to the next practices, which explicitly presents how to eliminate the afflicted minds. So thank you very much.